Are you a business looking for a fresh new way to reach potential customers? Well, you need to get airtime on IT TV, a 24/7 streaming and on-demand TV service online and on Roku. With Roku having a potential reach of 62 million people, it's a perfect opportunity to reach potential customers through affordable commercial and infomercial spots. Visit us online today at itnetwork.tv.
Good morning. Good morning and happy Monday is my favorite day of the week. I love the energy of a Monday, but you know what? I didn't tell our guests. I usually tell everyone, but I forgot this morning for some reason. But there are two shows you do not want to be on. That's my Monday show and my Friday show. Mondays, I've had way too much sleep. Fridays, I haven't had enough sleep. And so only the good Lord knows what I'm going to say and what I'm going to ask, but we're going to have a lot of fun today. But before we get started on today's show, I'm going to go ahead and invite you to share this show with your friends, share it with your network, share it with your neighbors, your coworkers, your spouse, your boss. There's someone in your immediate circle who needs this information. Maybe they're a new entrepreneur. Maybe they're just starting out on their business, but they won't learn the information that we're sharing today unless you go ahead and share the show with them. And as I always say, friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're introducing the show to your network, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guests, David and Giselle Taraba. They are co-owners. Good morning. Of the Maitri Center and focus on offering self-love and self-compassion support to individuals and help bring compassion into the workplace. Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for having us on your show.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. It's nice to have you. I love when couples are on the show. I get to see what kind of couples they are. The last couple kept finishing each other's sentence. That's how I knew they were in sync. So if y'all get into an argument on the show, that also tells me a lot. No, I'm stopping your hard talk.
Let's hope not.
Yeah.
Tell us about yourselves. Who are you? What do you do? And what are you passionate about?
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much. So as you mentioned, we are the Maitri Center. I'm Giselle, and this is David, and we are passionate about helping people unlearn some of the negative messages that they have learned. We believe that love and compassion are default setting, that this is who we really are at our core, but we've learned all of these messages that take us away from ourselves, and our passion really is to kind of undo all of that so that people can be more authentically themselves.
Yeah. And just to add to that, we work with individuals and businesses alike, and we bring compassion into the workplace, and we teach seminars and workshops on different varying topics to allow people to learn on their own journey at their own pace. And we just kind of work with those people who have had that awakening and want something else, and in the form of compassion and self-love.
Think we're going to be talking a lot today about compassion and self-love. We're going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. Our next guest is a therapist and author, Cheryl Bouvet. She encourages us to live for real, our honest, full self in all our beauty and messiness. She is the author of My Wild, Your Wild. Good morning, Cheryl. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are you? What do you do? And what are you passionate about?
My day job, where I make my living, I'm a therapist. I work primarily with kids and their families, a lot with adult women more than men. But so that's what I do with all my time. The last few years, I've been working on a book that I published last year. And so part of my journey right now is learning how to market that. And I'm mixed about that. I'm passionate about people living their life and maybe especially helping women be sure they're living their life in the way that they want to and not the way they've been prescribed by their families or the culture or their religion, but just making sure that it's their choices in their life and they're doing that on purpose.
I just want to go into your office. Your office just looks so relaxing. I could just lay on the couch under the what is that called on the wall?
That's a tapestry that has a circle of women in the middle. This is my home office, my office where I work from during the day. You'd see a bunch of toys because I'm also a play therapist. When I work with kids, I do a lot of play therapy.
Oh, I love it. I love the tapestry. I'm going to come back to you, Cheryl. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Ray Warner. After suddenly losing his first wife, Ray Warner went through his own transformational journey where he rediscovered his self-worth. Now he collaborates with women to recognize their true value in both their personal and professional lives through overcoming limiting beliefs, discovering internal power, and connecting to purpose. Good morning, Ray. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. I love to learn about people and their journeys and their stories. So tell us about yourself, Ray.
Yeah, like you mentioned, I lost my wife, my first wife, 26 years ago. And in that process, I learned a lot about myself. One of the big things when people have lost, had a major loss, whether it's a loss of a loved one, whether they've been laid off from their job or whatever this loss, divorce, is a loss of identity, a loss of self, a loss of knowing who they are, what they want, and what's next in their life. And that's what I support people with, is reconnecting with that identity inside themselves and knowing what they want and discovering what they want, altering what they may have had planned from before, or even creating something new, a new vision for their life. And that's really part of what I'm really passionate about, is connection. Connection with people. When people lose, go through a loss, a lot of their connections are lost with that loss. When you lose a job, all of the people that you work with, you're no longer connected with the same way. When you have a loss of a loved one, a lot of times, if you had friends of your spouse or your loved one, the connections change. So rediscovering those connections and making them stronger, because this world is so much better. Everything, all of our problems in this world will be so much better if people connected one-on-one, just to connect, to make sure that they knew people one-on-one instead of othering or, you know, talking about what groups they're part of.
I love it, Ray. We're going to learn some more about you, what you have going on. I just want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, the lovely Miss Angela Karanja. She is the founder of Raising Remarkable Teenagers, helping parents raise mentally healthy teenagers without losing their minds. Angela is a world-renowned adolescent psychologist and parenting teenagers expert who rose from extremely impoverished background and childhood abuse, and like a lotus, was able to thrive despite the mud and the muck. Welcome, Angela. How are you today?
I am so, so excited. I am so, so grateful, Sharifa, for being here. And like you said, I'm so passionate about parents having that amazing relationship with their teenagers, especially during this time. Teenage years, I think we all know, they have an identity crisis, and there's so much pull and tug, a lot of disconnection. But how can you as a parent be a leader? Because it's in leadership that we are able to influence our young people. It's being credible leaders that we are able to influence our young people. So I teach parents how to be leaders in their young people's lives, how to be influencers in their young people's lives, so that your child, your kid, your teen actually wants to listen to you. That's what I do.
So we're going to talk about that. I just want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. If you have ever watched the episode of the Roundtable Talk Show, you have most likely seen this guest before. He's been on the Roundtable Talk Show and plenty of my other shows many times. And I always love when we have the opportunity to speak to one of the coolest dads around, Mr. Robert Foster. He is the host of Shut Up and Grind with Robert B. Foster, as well as a storytelling coach. He has shared his incomparable strength and resilience with our guests, and he is someone who has been through his fair share of hardships. He was able to walk away with a deeper understanding of his life's purpose, and now he helps others as well. Good morning. Welcome back, Robert. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Always a pleasure to have you. For anyone who was hiding under a rock and who has not heard of you, tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are you? What do you do? And what are you passionate about?
Hey, well, first and foremost, at my core, I'm a single father of five children, three of which are, well, technically four of which are teenagers. So Angela and I are going to have a whole lot to talk about here. But at my core, who am I? I am a competitor. I'm a competitive athlete. To me, winning matters. Teaching other people how to win matters. And as a storytelling coach, which I called myself that, there was no special certification. I just decided that's what I'm going to be. Is I help people find the power in their past traumas and help them turn those into stories, whether they want to share them on stages, whether they want to start a blog or a podcast, write a book, because everybody goes through something at some point and everybody has a story, but not everybody knows how to tell it. So that's where I come into play and I help them tell those stories.
Okay, but we have some people here, Robert. We have some people who have some stories. Let's see, we're going to talk to Ray. We're going to help Ray find his story. Okay, Robert?
Got it.
Okay. Okay. So, Ray, my question for you is you mentioned connection, right? And during a global pandemic, there are so many people, connection is the most difficult aspect for them because they're sitting at home, they're alone, and the one thing that they are unable to do is connect to people the way they're used to. What are some of your strategies and advice and guidelines you would offer them?
Well, I mean, what we're doing, what we're up to here is a perfect example. While, yes, there's been less ability to connect physically. And I personally, I totally miss being able to see people in person, hug them, just talk to them face to face. This technology has made it almost like I've been able to connect more with some people, because if I have a free hour, I can hop on Zoom or WebEx or StreamYard and talk to somebody in Australia, in the UK, in Philly, which is, you know, I'm in Pittsburgh and Philly. You may think it's closer than it is, but it's 6 hours from me. So you can't just go over next door and talk to them. So this kind of connection, while not as close as being in person and actually being able to touch people, it's almost better because you can talk to people you wouldn't be able to talk to normally.
Definitely agree. Angela, where are you located?
I'm in the UK. I'm in Oxfordshire.
Okay. Have you been speaking to people all over the world?
I have. It's interesting when Ray was talking about, I'm like, I speak to people from Australia, from Canada, from Kenya, from South Africa, from Ghana, from literally all over the world, Dubai. And like, I'm thinking literally all over the world. I think there was the other side of the pandemic was that being able to actually see farther and be able to look farther and actually get that the braveness to actually venture and speak to whoever and whenever. The only problem is the time difference sometimes. So sometimes I have to be like, okay, it's 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm having to speak to someone because they're in a very different time zone. But then that's the only downside. But being able to reach people all over the world, amazing.
to Robas, have you been able to connect with more people, different people, get your message out there?
Yes, definitely. We very much like Angela. We've been networking throughout. One of the things that I think that the pandemic has been, where it's been a bit of a gift, has been our connections to ourselves. For so long, I think we've been doing. And I think the pandemic kind of forced us to have a home, if we have one, and to really spend more time with ourselves. And I think connecting to ourselves has been really kind of paramount. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the work that we do is really about connecting to ourselves and not being always in that busyness and the distraction out there. And so for us, we've really found it as an opportunity to connect inward.
Yeah. And that's reflected with these wonderful conversations and relationships that we can then have with our clients and friends and people of like across the world, right? Because you're connected to the internet. So it's been pretty cool.
Yes. How has it been for you, Cheryl?
I appreciated being able to continue to meet with people on Zoom when we had to shut down almost 2 years ago. It doesn't work really well for children. So I like to find a balance between meeting people digitally when you need to, and then being able to see people in person. You miss a lot when you're on Zoom. I've noticed that, especially maybe with adults, sometimes it's easier for them to hide about what's going on. But I'm not so much for my work, but I have a couple of groups that I belong to, and there are people there from all over the world, which it's just a lot of fun to connect with people who just have different experiences. I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Now, Angela, do you have any suggestions or advice on ways to connect with your teenagers or children, especially now?
Absolutely. And, you know, you talk about connection, and I know I've mentioned, this is a statistic I use very many times. You guys, do you know, like, 40% of our teenagers report to be lonely? And that means, like, there's six of us here, three of our teenagers are lonely. And these are not teenagers who haven't got parents or from, like, what you would say, bad families and that. It's just something that happens in teenage years. And obviously, that, when they are disconnected like that, our young people become extremely vulnerable to exploitation, to crime exploitation, drug exploitation, sexual exploitation, and also a lot of mental health problems. So what I have really been encouraging parents to do is to really connect, find ways to connect with your young person, because when we are disconnected with them, that's when they become so susceptible. Someone else, you see, for example, like now, I'm in Oxfordshire. My kid, my teenager, has access to a kid in Japan or wherever, or downtown Texas or Canada. And if we haven't got those strong connections with them, right, what's going to happen? They're going to follow what that other kid says, right? And none of us is invincible. And I'll tell you why. Because teenagers have what we call a converging teen culture. They are thinking the same. They are talking the same. They are plotting the same. They are scheming the same. So it's so important for us as parents, especially, to be so close-knit so we can stop and diminish that vulnerability as much as we can. Very, very important.
Robert, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, so as I said earlier, I logged on late. I was speaking with my almost 15-year-old daughter. So she plays on a softball team. And one of the other girls on the team, a bunch of them don't really get along with. And so I was just listening to her explain, you know, her feelings about the matter. And then on the flip side to what Angela just said, and I'm not refuting what you said spot on, but just the other side of it is to teach children how to connect. So I was just telling my daughter, all right, so this is what you don't like about her, but what are her good qualities? Like, how can you enhance her good qualities instead of throwing her bad qualities in her face? And that's the beauty of connection. And one thing I learned from everything going virtual and listening to how people tell their stories, and how I shifted into being a gym owner, a podcast host, into a storytelling coach, is most people tell their story from their own perspective. Now, your own perspective definitely matters, but when you're trying to connect with someone else, you have to tell your story according to their perspective. And how can your story enhance their life? That's when you're going to find the beauty and the power of connections.
I love that.
Beautiful.
I love it.
Don't let the drink not fool you. I got skills.
I completely agree with you there, Robert. And just to tag along on what you said, there is that leaning in and listening to your teenagers, especially. Mm-hmm. Because you want to know what is it that they want to tell you. And without leaning in and listening, you will not know. And therefore, the conversation is probably going to be coming from my preconceived ideas instead of being led by them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually a vital part of connection, is listening, leaning in, and listening to the listening. It's not just what they say, the words they say, but sometimes it's what they don't say. It's the choice of words, their body language. It's connecting with the person, not thinking, how am I going to respond? What's my next response? That's the key of connection, is really listening, whether it's a teenager or whether it's an adult or whomever it is. If you're not listening for all of it, you're going to lose a lot.
Mm-hmm. Cheryl, love to hear your thoughts.
I find the biggest complaint I get from teenagers when I work with them, and I work with a fair amount of teenagers, is that they don't believe their parents listen to them. And I think it's true. I think that lots of times parents will react or overreact to some of the conversations they might hear from their teenagers. And I think it starts when they're younger. I tell most of the parents I work with, you need to be able to be an open parent who can have a conversation about the hard topics like sex and drugs. If your kids can have those conversations with you, they're going to come to you when life gets bumpy, which it will. So that connection about, and really listening, deep listening, is important for those teenagers. I live in Montana, and we have a really high teenage suicide rate.
Mm. Wow. Wow. No, I definitely agree. My son's 24 now, but I remember when he was 21, we had this long, about 2-hour conversation. At the end of the conversation, he said to me, "Mom, thank you for listening to me." And I was like, "No, son, thank you for talking to me." You know, because how many 21-year-old males want to sit and have a conversation with their mom? So it was a special moment for me. Tarabas, I see you over there nodding and agreeing. Love to hear your conversation.
Yeah, so obviously we agree with everybody here that the consensus on listening is super important, because that's the only way you're going to really start to understand the viewpoint. Just to add to that, to kind of build on what Angela was speaking about, how the teens have their own inward focused culture, I think you said, or something to that effect, like their own collective understanding from the age group. What we do, we have a focus on bringing the idea of how important it is to understand your perception, where your perception is coming from. Because we really believe, and what we share with others, is that our experience with others in our day-to-day life comes through our perceived beliefs and our perception of our surroundings. So what you're going to see is the understanding of what you experience is limited to what beliefs you bring with it, what baggage you bring with it, what thoughts you have spinning around in your head. Excuse me. So basically what we do is we share that with teenagers too, because they have a lot of these skills that are unlocked, or it's certainly not necessarily remembered within themselves. And one of them is they can really understand that they're not at the affect of those surrounding them, but they are part of the creation of that experience. So we've had a lot of success with the idea that, you know, listening to the teen or to whoever you're speaking with. And then what I try to do is bring into the conversation, well, where is this understanding coming from within you? Because more than not, they're dragging some form of lack idea that they have about themselves in a lot of ways, that they kind of paint the understanding of whatever they're experiencing with. And so then you can explore like the larger picture of what's really going on, because everything is an opportunity for growth, and that's how we see it. So we kind of try to bring that to the forefront and work through the empowering function.
Yeah, that's right. And one of the things we've seen is that teenagers feel so vulnerable, and they have a hard time communicating their vulnerability to their friends. And so if somebody slights them or doesn't talk to them, they don't lean in and communicate and say, well, you know, can you help me understand? Because they need to hold space and have compassion for their own feelings. And so we help them through that journey. And then I think then only when they see their own vulnerability, can they understand the vulnerability and the behavior of their friends. Mm-hmm. But it is about the perception and the mindset is a big part of it.
Yeah,
Sharif, if I can jump in real quick. I had a guest on the show a couple weeks ago. She's in her late 30s now. And she said that she didn't really find her voice until around 30 years old. Because growing up, she wasn't allowed to be heard. So she could be seen, but her parents didn't want to hear what she had to say. So growing up, she kept to herself. She didn't know how to express herself. She didn't know how to go to people for help. And she buried all those things inside of her. And so now she created a program addressing all of that. But I just wanted to throw that part in just so people understand, like, how you talk to your kids now can have lifelong effects later. And as I don't remember who just said about being able to have those hard discussions with your children, again, going back to my daughter just last week, I told her, I was like, look, you know, you're at the age now where you might have friends who are vaping or trying smoking. You're going to have friends who might be doing drugs or drinking alcohol. I said, if you're exposed to any of that stuff, and if you get tempted and you try it, I said, you have to remember one thing. I am your number one ally. So you can come to me with anything, no matter how bad you may feel about it, no matter how shameful you may feel about it. It's like, yeah, may I get upset? Possibly. But I would rather you come to me. Let's have that discussion than me find out down the road that you've been lying to me. And now that trust is breached. So that last thing you want to do is lose the trust of your number one ally. So because no matter what happens to you in your life, your dad is always going to be there for you. Now, I know there are a lot of dads that aren't in the picture. I'm just talking about me. I was like, your dad is going to be in your picture. No matter what it is you go through in life, I'm there for you. So you have to know that that line of communication is always open. And I think kids knowing that, you know, like if you go down the road and you do something wrong, that you can go to that parent and be like, hey, I was out with so-and-so. I got tempted. This is what I did. And then let's talk through it and figure out a solution so maybe that doesn't happen again. But kids have to know that they can go to you, you know, not as a friend, you know, you still want to be their parent, but they have to know that they can come to you regardless of the circumstance.
I think that's a beautiful point, but I also think, and we're gonna discuss this after the commercial break, but I think that is the signs of the time. So I'm gonna stop now for a brief commercial break and we will be right back.
You need JordansRooter.com. Get free estimates, 24-hour service, special discounts for seniors and veterans. That's JordansRooter.com. Have a home repair or some remodeling you need done? No problem. We can handle all that too. Give us a call today at 800-300-0358. At Jordans Rooter, we take pride in our work and always make sure to get the job done right the first time. That's JordansRooter.com. We want to be your Mr. Fix-It.
Are you a business owner, CEO, entrepreneur, artist, musician, celebrity, or influencer interested in more exposure for your business? Schedule your one-on-one interview with Sharifa Hardy today. We handle everything for you. We video interview you, we professionally produce your interview, and we distribute your interview. We do the work so you can focus on putting your best foot forward. If you have been looking for more ways to get your product or service in front of more people, this is the opportunity for you. Schedule your one-on-one interview with Sharifa Hardy today.
Yes, if you are just now tuning in to the Roundtable Talk Show, we have been having a very interesting conversation. Like always, we have absolutely no idea where the conversation is going to go. So if you missed any part of the show, you definitely want to catch the show from the top in the archives. But today, we're discussing teenagers, communication, connection. And one of the things that Robert was saying prior to the show is being an ally for your children. Also, seen and not heard. And I think that's really a generational thing. I had this conversation with my mother. She said, you know, when I was growing up, children were to be seen and not heard. And I've told my children now, you can say whatever you want to me. You cannot say it however you want to say it. You still have to be respectful. But that line of communication has to be open, because when we teach our children that they don't have a voice, and I believe, because I'm sexist, especially a female child, you take away their ability to say no. You take away their ability to set boundaries because they no longer have a voice. I see you nodding your head, Ray. Love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, my daughter, I have a 14-year-old daughter, and she is frequently, she has people who are bullied, who bully her at school. And the conversation that I have with her is about how she can take responsibility for her own self, but while sharing what's going on with me. So the comment that I make to her is, it's a quote from Eleanor Roosevelt, nobody can make you feel bad without your permission. If she takes responsibility for how she feels, then these bullies, she won't respond to them. That's one of my common comments is, you know, the more you respond, the more you show that you're upset, the more they're going to do it. And so when she takes responsibility for her own emotions and her own reactions, then the bullies are essentially disarmed. And this is something that I work with a lot with her, is the concept of responsibility and being source, being instead of being victim of her circumstances, is being the source of her own life and being the sole and uncontested author of her life. What her life is, she gets to choose. Everything in life is a choice. And this is one of the big things with teenagers, is learning responsibility and how much influence they have over their own life. Instead of life happening to them, life is happening for them.
Mm, absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I like to say and I emphasize is, a lot of what we are talking about here is caught, not taught. Mm-hmm. I can tell my kid, go out there, be black, be beautiful. But if I cannot be black and beautiful, mm-hmm. it doesn't work like that. Words are just words. Yes, they have power, but there is nothing as influential as living the life that you are expecting especially our teenagers to live. And for it, I'll give an example. Our young people are growing up, I don't know about you guys, but my daughter goes to a mainstream school, and we've got private schools and we've got public schools, for all sorts of schools. There is something I have been working to empower her about, and it's about permission, asking for permission-based questions or empowered questions. For example, I can almost guarantee you, all of our kids, when they want to go to the toilet, they have to ask for permission. They have to ask for permission to go and perform a bodily function. So what's that teaching them? It's teaching them to ask permission. What if we moved to them letting us know what their need is? Like, I know Sharifa said there about being sexist. You know, there is that empowering. Instead of your kid asking you, can I have a sandwich? What if we showed them, we made them feel comfortable to say, oh, I'd like to have a sandwich, right? Do you see that? And we are comfortable with it, but we are from a different generation, like most of us. We were there to be seen, not to be heard. So it's a relearning process. And this I teach them. I really encourage teachers as well to allow our kids to have that empowered-based question instead of permission-based questions, so they can learn to think and evaluate.
Along those lines too, like, I don't let my kids say that they don't know something. Like, one of my twin boys came down and he's like, Dad, can you make me eggs? And I said, why don't you make you eggs? And he says, because I don't know how. I said, well, stop. I was like, reframe. He's like, can you show me how to make eggs? Yes, I can. Go up, show him how to make it. Now he knows how. Because I teach them to seek the solution. And it was like, don't necessarily just default to, I don't know how. I don't know how. I can't do it. It's like, seek the info. Seek the knowledge. Because as Katoma said, because as you get older, you know, that's the beauty of being adults, is we're surrounded by people that know stuff that we don't know. So if you seek the knowledge, you're going to have a much easier time in life instead of just defeating yourself and saying, I don't know how to do it. So that's exactly how you talk to them and how you teach them to talk to others and about themselves can shape them up for the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm. And one other thing I'd like to touch on is trust. That we as parents want our kids to trust us and come to us, like what Robert was talking about just a little while ago, which is great. But I find that parents don't always come with that openness that the children require, right? So when you're having those difficult conversations about drugs and about sex and about doing alcohol, whatever, like just we've all done things through our lives that we don't necessarily want to see our kids have to go through, but they're on their journey. They're going to be empowered beings just like we are. They're going to be adults. They're going to be maybe something that we don't desire them to be, but if that's their path, that's their path. So I really strongly believe that what we did with our children from the get-go is like we made a pact never to lie to them. Like we don't lie. If they ask the questions it's going to be a difficult conversation, I'll ask them a question saying, are you sure you want to go down this road? Because this will be a challenging conversation for you at this stage in your growth, so to speak. Right. And we have had the ability to really have those hard conversations truthfully. It puts us at, I know we're still parents and that's a wonderful place to be. We have great responsibility and it comes with a lot of stuff, but when you're going to have a conversation from a, you know, you're trying to meet your teen where they are, you kind of have to go to more of a place of a peership so you can establish a two-way dialogue. And we in our experience, we found that a lot of parents still kind of, they're not allowing themselves that level of vulnerability to go into those conversations. So it's just something to think about.
Yeah. And that's why I think for us, the practice of self-compassion for parents is so important, because I think, you know, none of us are, you know, born doing this. There's no manual that tells us how to be parents. And sometimes we really beat ourselves up and then we expect the kids to really, you know, be loving and compassionate towards themselves. So going back to the comments made earlier, it really starts with the parents and with themselves, mm-hmm. and being able to be vulnerable, to be truthful with themselves, and to have those conversations with the kids and understand that they may make choices you don't want, but don't underestimate the value of the seeds you're planting. Because I've seen that with our kids. I mean, we plant seeds and sometimes they're like, oh, this is ridiculous, or you don't know anything. And then later on, they will either say something to themselves that we've said or say it to a friend. So, mm-hmm. you know, but parents underestimate the amount of, you know, investment that they're making.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I can speak to the idea about kids and trust. My kids are grown and I can agree with Gazelle about don't question the seeds you're planting, because when they're in their 40s, chances are you're going to hear the things that you've been saying to them. And I hear it a lot. I have kids from in their 40s to in their 20s. But I wanted to really comment on the idea about trust. I have a big poster in my office that I created that I just added stuff to, like, you know, no excuses and no blaming and be respectful and responsible. But there's a big T in the middle of it, because I think everything that I talk about at work and is about trust between people and trust in self. Mm-hmm. And they're both incredibly important, but I'm not sure that, you know, trust may be one of the biggest deals that we all need to figure out, you know, all of us.
Mm, yeah. Absolutely.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed.
Go ahead.
I said, and I think this trust, like Gazelle said, it starts from us being to trust ourselves. How much do I trust myself? If truly I trust the way I am parenting my child, then I should not really be hovering over them. Because if I trust in my ability, right, then what I'm giving them should be trust strong, right? And if they go and make a mistake, like Robert said, there is grace. And people who are trusting of themselves have grace. They have compassion, right? And I think we really have to heal ourselves first as parents. And that's why I was talking about leadership. And before we are a great leader, we have to be able to lead ourselves. Self-regulation really is top of the list. Before we influence anyone, we've got to be able to do it in our own lives.
Yes, I definitely agree. I mean, because leadership and doing it in our own lives is a big part of trust, because many parents would give their children that line, do as I say, not as I do, right? And so then the child doesn't trust the words that are coming because they're watching the actions of the parent. Now, you wanted to say something, Robert?
Yeah, well, more so now along those lines with the whole trust thing, as human nature, we are hardwired to be skeptical. That's just how, that's like our DNA. If you go way back to when the first humans were here, you're constantly on the lookout for danger, but things that can be hurtful to us. So even now throughout our evolution, we still have that programming to be skeptical. And so I believe it was Tarabas who said earlier about being your authentic self. And that's one of the biggest things through the storytelling that I help people figure out. It's like, who are you at your core? Like when you asked us who we are in the very beginning, and I said, you know, I'm a father first and foremost, but I'm a competitor. It's like, that's who I am in my core. So anything that I encounter in life, I see it as a challenge. And then so even with raising my children, I know there's a probability that XYZ can happen. And now most people raise their kids the way they were raised, because that's what they know. And although there is a manual now, I'm actually speaking on the show after this called the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast. And the host of that show actually wrote a parenting handbook. But so there is one out there. But anyway, most people raise kids the way they were raised. So for me, I was very straight and narrow. I didn't get into drugs, didn't get into drinking. Didn't even get into dating until I was in my 20s. So trying to navigate all the temptations that are out there, it's tough for me because I avoided it all. But that's where I have to take the step back. Like, it's not about me and my experience because I was able to avoid it all. And again, it's just having that open dialogue with the kids, letting them know what's out there, letting them know people are going to try to tempt you, but this is where you have to be strong enough, know who you are, and don't give in to the temptation. But if you do, it's okay. You're human. Just come talk to me about it.
Yes. And also being clear on your circle. You know what I mean? Because it's a lot of time it's your circle that you're around. Ray, we've been talking about trust. We've been talking about parenting. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Trust, this idea of self-trust is so vital. Without self-trust, you won't be able to give yourself grace, or you'll be stuck in like, what do I do? What do I do? You won't do anything if you're stuck in, I don't trust myself. And so the lack of self-trust can sometimes come from past trauma. Like, you don't feel safe to trust yourself. And that's something that I've been touching into with my work is how much past trauma, and trauma with a big T and a little T, how much of that impacts us even today, years later, how much of that has held me back, held other people back. And coming around to the idea of feeling safe in your body, in yourself, so that you can trust not only yourself, but others, that it comes back to feeling safe. Once you feel safe, then you can feel safe to trust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely agree. Cheryl, I'd love to hear your thoughts on what Ray had to say.
Somebody mentioned compassion with yourself. I think that's related to the trust of yourself. And I think that often we don't teach our children, younger ones or teenagers, to trust themselves. And it's probably because we don't do such a good job at that. The other thought I had was, I think it was Robert, said when your kids mess up, you need to welcome them back in. But I think one way to welcome them back in is to acknowledge our own messiness. people are messy. You put messy people together, they're going to make up messy families. And that's not a problem. That's just human beings and who we are. And if we can accept and embrace that, not mean that we don't try to improve and maybe not make the same mistakes over and over again, that would be a good thing. But I think when we acknowledge our messiness to our children, it gives them permission to do the same thing too. And sometimes the best gift a parent can give their kids is to apologize, to say something wrong and say they're sorry for what they did. Kids will get over it. Kids are so drawn to forgive their parents. They will forgive you.
Yes, definitely agree. Definitely agree. Angela, love to hear your thoughts.
I love what you said, Cheryl, about forgiveness. This is one of the things for us, forgiveness here, and saying you're sorry is nothing. We say that all day long. Why? Because we make mistakes all day long, right? And for us, mistakes is just a learning process, right? But what you said about we're not propagating reputation, but what we are saying is, oopsie, and then let's move on, right? Because when we beat ourselves, we don't learn, we get stuck, right? And how the brain works, in neuroscience, we know how the brain works is when we are forgiven, like you allow the next life to come through. But every time you say to a kid, oh, you've done this, it's like there's a gate. And what happens when there's a gate is that there's no continuation of life. And that's what we are robbing them. When we make them feel stuck in something that they have done, or even when we make ourselves feel that, oh, this, I could never get over this. No, we make mistakes. It is okay to make mistakes. Everyone is allowed to make mistakes. And let's move on and actually forgive and let go, because that's the only way that life advances. Otherwise, we are stuck.
We definitely don't want to be stuck.
Yeah, forgiveness is about not about the other person. It's not about saying the other person, what the other person did was okay. Forgiveness is about yourself. Forgiveness is about letting go of it and not being stuck in that dirt, in that mess. It's saying, I acknowledge my breakdown. I acknowledge I did this. I'm letting it go. Mm-hmm. Or I acknowledge what may have happened caused me to feel a certain way. It's back to the idea of responsibility and taking ownership for who you are and how you feel and your entire life, really.
Yes, taking ownership. We definitely have to take ownership. Love to hear from the Tarabas.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to mention that, you know, I don't think people understand that when someone hurts you and you stay mad at them and angry at them, first of all, it hurts yourself, right? And also it keeps you connected to that person. It keeps you connected to that event energetically. And so forgiveness really is just a releasing of yourself from that story, from that event, from that perception, from those memories that you had experienced. And when you're able to kind of give yourself the nurturing, some of the compassion that you would have wanted, I guess, when that experience happened, when you're able to hold space for yourself and your emotions, you're able to look back at those events and look at it from an observer. Like you don't have the same emotions. You don't go into the same drama. You're able to see it from the perspective of like, okay, that was an experience that happened. And now this is where I am now. So forgiveness it's such a powerful, powerful gift. But I don't think people realize that by not forgiving, they're also keeping themselves attached to that and to that person as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
So just to add, like what we talk about, we've been talking about trust and forgiveness. And for us, what we teach is this all speaks to the inward journey. So we're really big on the inward journey for individuals, which translates to workplace and everything in your daily life. But you cannot trust anybody unless you trust yourself. You cannot forgive anybody unless you forgive yourself. So even when you feel you're forgiving somebody, you're really not. You're trying to forgive yourself. You may do it in a compartmentalized way that, oh, this person did something to me, so I'm going to forgive them for it. But it really only everything has to come through us in order to be experienced. So that forgiveness is like what Giselle was speaking to. It's us learning to forgive ourselves. And for the emotion, the baggage and the hurt that we've been carrying on with, because to a degree, we always feel guilty for stuff that we've done and we've been dragging it along for that forever. That's why it keeps showing up in our day-to-day lives. There's that guilt that's attached to whatever is coming up through, and then, okay, I'm going to forgive this person and then it'll go away. But it doesn't. It has to come from within out. So just...
See, and that's the power of storytelling. So when I work with people overcoming trauma, like I just worked with, I'll name a couple, a woman who her first love committed suicide right in front of her. This was in her 20s. She's in her 40s now. I helped someone who survived a stroke at the age of 36. And, you know, the stories go on and on, from bad divorces to getting let go from a career. And so, like, there's different levels of trauma. And I always tell people, how to step forward, the process is the same. So when we're talking about ownership and we're talking about forgiveness, is you have to worry about healing yourself. So, I mean, yes, some people are externally driven and maybe you want that I'm sorry from the person who hurt you. But if it never comes, that doesn't mean that you still have to hold on to that trauma. So letting go isn't the same thing as forgetting. You know, so letting go means that you yourself are not going to allow your emotions to be controlled by that person or that event anymore. And so in the storytelling aspect, I tell people it's not what happened, it's what happened 1 second after through today. That's where the power is in what happened, and acknowledging that and owning that is what's going to help you move forward and ultimately forgive yourself for putting yourself in that position in the first place.
I definitely agree. I always think of forgiveness as like putting somebody in prison, but you still have to be the warden to stay there to make sure they stay in prison. Yeah. So if you want to go on with your life, you have to release them as well. This has been an incredible show. We have learned a lot. It has been a pleasure. Now we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience. To everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Ray.
For me, my big takeaway for everybody out there is all events are neutral. All events really have no meaning other than the meaning that we assign to them. And if you can recognize that and choose an empowering conversation, an empowering interpretation, and take responsibility for creating the life that you wish, then you can have the life of your dreams. And that's one of the big things that I work with people on, is recognizing their own power so that they can take it back, so they can create the life of their dreams. And you can find me at raywarnercoaching.com and connect, and we can start working on that from there.
Thank you, Ray. Cheryl, what do you have today for the people?
Well, I'm going to toot my own horn. Here's my book. You can buy it on Amazon. And so if you do buy, if you give me your name and address, I'll send you one with a caveat that maybe you'll write a review. So put your name and address in the chat and I'll send one to you. I think I'd like to end with the idea of two things. One is to make sure you're living your life on purpose, so that you have a plan and a purpose. And even if you're purposefully mess it up, at least you did it on purpose and you can go back and change your mind. And then the other thing is just to, I think I've been doing it for over 20 years now, but so it's a lifestyle for me, and that's the practice of gratitude. And there's so much science right now that supports the practice of gratitude as a powerful life-changing practice. So that's my two things.
Be purposeful and be grateful. Thank you. Giselle, David, what do you have for the people?
Yeah, thank you very much. We love what everybody else has said. Awesome. We just want to remind the audience that you are more powerful and more empowered than you give yourself credit for. So often we give away our power to other people and we allow them to determine how we feel about ourselves and how we feel about our lives. And we just want to remind you that you are powerful. Come work with us to help you unlearn some of the stuff that you have learned. Our website's www.naitricentre.com. Bye.
No final words, David?
Oh, sure. I'll just add this one quick thing, that the discussion that we had today, to me, to sum it up, was the inward journey can be reflected into the lived experience. So everything we spoke about today, which is wonderful, it's very enlightening, but it all comes through us in order to be experienced. That's the, we feel, the fundamental way to invoke change in your lived experience is to focus on yourself. And that's one thing that we can all maybe use in our lives. Yeah. So thank you for having us. It's been great.
Absolutely. Thank you. Angela, what do you have today?
Hey, I just want to say that, just like Giselle said, did you know that we have 50 trillion cells in our body? Each one of us, over 50 trillion cells. And listen to this, in 1991, scientists discovered that in each of every of that cell, there is what they call the God code, meaning that the universe, whoever made the universe, whether, and this is not a religious thing, there is a stamp of the maker in you, in each of those cells. Come on, we've got to give ourselves credit here. It says, the code says, God eternal within me. And if you don't believe me, go check it out. We can send you the journals. You know how we know the scientific coding on the periodic table? That's the one. Each one of ourselves. So come on, let's give ourselves credit. We are a masterpiece. And you guys are a masterpiece, each one of you. And I think we need to remind ourselves of that, and also remind everyone around us, especially our young people who at this time are going through an identity crisis. We need to remind them that.
Thank you, Angela. Robert.
Yeah. All right, so you've heard the word a couple times already, and the word was power. And there's nothing more powerful in your mental arsenal than your personal story. Because everyone has a story, it's just a matter of how you tell it. It doesn't have to be a major story of overcoming. It can be whatever you want it to be. I've helped people take the most basic of stories and turn them into extremely powerful and inspirational messages of hope, of courage, of perseverance. So whatever it is that you have in your subconscious mind, if you want to turn it into something powerful, reach out to me, robertbfoster.com. We'll get on the phone, 30 minutes, free of charge, and I'll help you craft that first story. No weird sales call at the end. I just want to help you show that you have the power. It's already there. It's right at the tip of your tongue, and I can help you bring it to life.
I love it. I love it. Thank you, Robert. I want to thank you all for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives. I appreciate your support. I appreciate you watching. I appreciate you sharing. But the most important thing to me is that you support our guests. Our guests were here this morning to share their stories, their books, their information, their strategies with you. So please support them. Visit their websites. Follow them on social media. Reach out to them. Send them a message. And when you do, please let them know. Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.